listening to the Best of the Giants.
And the Giants have won!
A weekly mix of WFAN Sports Radio 101.9's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
The Sim Spotlight brought to you by Balance of Nature Whole Food Supplements. Visit balanceofnature.com. He joins us on Boomer and Geo, where we come to you live for the Built Ford Tough Studio every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Phil Sims. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, Geo. How are you today?
We're doing well. You did piss off Al Dukes, though, for not knowing anything about these drones and living in New Jersey. I mean, you got to be up with the times. You got to know what's going on. You're a resident of New Jersey. You had no idea about these things flying in the sky. And that's Al's biggest pet peeve, that, you know, everybody in New Jersey just doesn't know what's going on and not paying attention. You're one of those people.
No, I pay attention enough. I asked Al and everything. I wanted to hear his expertise, and he told me this. Well, I don't know. So thanks for that, Al. That was good stuff. Learned a lot there. But yeah. So yeah, he's letting me out. We're having a little conversation waiting to come on, and there's Al stabbing me in the back. Get away, big guy.
Well, you know, thinking about it, you know, you are like one of the largest taxpayers in New Jersey State. So I think that you could actually put some pressure on the governor down there to get these answers out there for the citizens like Al that are concerned.
Yeah. That's a great thought. That's just not going to work. I've gone down trying to get my, you know, a lot of people do this. You say, well, I'm going to get my taxes lowered a little bit here, and then they go, you're lucky we don't raise it. Get out.
So, exactly. We've all been either. There, so don't worry about that. All right. So
yes, I know.
Let's talk a little football. What the hell do you think is going on inside the Eagles locker room with Jalen Hurts and A.J. Brown? Now, Brandon Graham, I'm assuming that you heard this. Graham, who was on IR, came out and basically said that there's a major rift between those two players. And, you know, I wonder, is this going to tear the team apart, the fact that Brandon Graham let this out there, or is this going to galvanize the team?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, many things tore them apart last year, that's for sure, and it was real. You know, there was, you know, people not happy with this guy, that guy, whatever. You know, I watch the Eagle games and all that, and I would say this about A.J. Brown as he runs down the field sometimes, and he's wide open, and why the ball is not coming his way. That's what he probably wants to know. And, yeah, even in the game against Carolina, yeah, there were instances where he had to be, like, the number one guy you look at, and the ball didn't go his way. So you know how receivers are. They can get upset by it. I never had to deal with it. I don't know if you did. Was Chris Collinsworth one of those guys moaning that he wasn't getting the football?
No, he was actually moaning that I was throwing the ball too much to him because he said I shortened his career. But I will say this, you know, to me, yes, the intimation here in regards to Brandon Graham talking about this was not an on-the-field problem. This feels like an off-the-field problem, whatever that may be.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think they also said A.J. Brown and Jalen Hurts were best friends, or good friends, I think, right? I read that.
Well, we thought so, but now all of a sudden there's a major issue, and I'm just wondering if this is the issue that derailed them last year is now getting ready to derail them this year, and it happens to come from an active player who's on IR now, but a very senior player within that locker room who's been there for quite some time and is very well thought of.
You know, there are many things, but here you are on a team, and arguably the best team in the NFL, right up there with anybody you want to talk about. There's really no true weakness on any spot you look at. So I just can't imagine they would let this interfere with what's going on, where they're thinking they are truly a Super Bowl team, and they have what it you need to get there. So if this derails them, that just shows you so many bad things about how weak they are. They will let this really fester, become part of what, and cost them wins going down the stretch here.
It'd be unbelievable if it does. It'd be really disappointing.
You know, I think the opposite happens.
Really?
I think that you're going to see A.J. Brown's biggest game this week. I think that this might be the thing that brings them together now that it's out there. They're saying, listen, we got to fix this thing. We're on the road here. Like, people are talking about it now. And you're going to see like 20 targets to A.J. Brown this week.
I would say this. You know, when you got receivers like A.J. Brown, they got Devontae Smith. He's really good too. Whatever. They're loaded. And give them the football. I mean, everybody throws about somewhere between 6 and 10 passes behind the line of scrimmage every game. Throw some screen passes to the two receivers, get them happy, give them some catches, and that's easy, an easy way to just get rid of this situation. We had one of these turmoil things with the head coach going and yelling at the fans, and I have said many times, and probably to you guys too, I thought that kind of galvanized the team. It settled them down, they got together, and they've been playing really, really well, and now this comes up. So, but you're right, A.J. Brown, I'm sure Jalen Hurts is going to be looking at him and giving him more of an opportunity to catch footballs. And like I said, yes, I understand when it gets to a certain point, the team's winning, but you want to be more of a part of it because literally it's one of the best combo wide receiver groups in the NFL. And you want those catches. And like I said, too, I guess as I watch their games, maybe I didn't pay enough attention to previous games. But when you run down the field and you're literally, it's there. Maybe it might not be a touchdown, but it's going to be close a few times. And when you don't see the football, I know that we weren't that kind of team, of course. So my wide receivers did not get frustrated, but I know it's happens on a lot of teams. And again, if this derails them, if they turn into what they did last year, then they deserve it.
I'm going to go on record by saying this is an off-the-field issue that permeates on the field when Phil is just highlighting maybe some of the difficulties on the field. And that's what makes the off-the-field issue so much more intense. Now, also, we got reports, and I know that you are on this one. You know it very well. You know the story very well. Bill Belichick potentially going to North Carolina, and the fact that there are other reports out there that, you know, NFL owners don't seem to be interested in him, and there's nobody has called him for any advice or any maybe oversight or something of what their teams are doing is shocking. Do you think that Bill Belichick is a legitimate candidate to take on North Carolina's football program?
I do. And I think what you're saying, you know, I read it too and all this. I do think there would be teams out there that would be afraid of Bill Belichick coming in because he's going to really take over the organization. And look, he knows how to run one. He's had great success. So, you know, and it's probably the reason why he didn't get a job this past year. It's just that people, owners, general managers, they want to be part of it too, and maybe they're afraid of being pushed out if they bring him in. That would be my first thought, which has been written 1,000 times already by people who cover the NFL. But going to college and his son coming along from the University of Washington, his defensive coordinator up there, I mean, I think that's all real too. Go down there, coach North Carolina for a year, 2 years, whatever, and get it to where you want it, and then you pass it along to your son. I would think that's got to be part of the equation why he's really looking into it.
Do you think he'd bring in North Carolina's greatest football player of all time, Lawrence Taylor?
And what would Lawrence do?
I don't know. I don't know. Would he coach? Would he be a part of the recruiting process? I don't know.
I think the percentages of that happening are a big fat zero.
Okay.
I just can't imagine Lawrence coming down there and go, hey, let's help you recruit or this. No, Lawrence... Coach Belichick will probably show a lot of films of him hitting people and how to do it, but as far as being part of it, no, I don't think that would happen.
All right, talking to Phil Simms, the Simms Spotlight, every Wednesday, 8 a.m. I ask you this every week, but every week it changes. And this past week, it got bad again. I mean, one of the worst offensive performances of the year. There's a plane flying over MetLife Stadium saying, Mr. Mara, enough, please fix this. Dumpster fire, 2-15 is on the table. 0-9 at home is on the table. They're the biggest home underdog of the year, I think maybe in a very long time. It is just Saquon could break the rushing record in the last week of the season against the Giants. How hard is it going to be for John Mara to sell Shane and Dable to the diehard Giants fans, the season ticket holders, the PSL holders, if they end up going 2-15 in their 100th season?
Well, you know, this is a tough question. I really can't answer it because I really don't want to, you know, to the fact. We'll just see how it goes. Hopefully the Giants can win a few games down the stretch here. It's rough.
But they don't want to win a couple games.
They don't want to win the games. That's the problem.
Well, the the coaches do, and the general manager in the front office, they want to win some games.
I don't know about that. I'm telling you, if they told John Mara candidly, like, listen, we're gonna Drew Lock's worse than Tommy DeVito. Evan Neal stinks. We're gonna put him out there. These guys that are hurt, we're gonna tell them, hey, just chill, whatever, because we need to get either Shedeur Sanders or Cam Ward. And just so you know, this is what's going on because we need to finally draft a quarterback and not happen what happened last year. We missed out on those top three because we won a couple games with Tommy DeVito. Just stick with us so we can get our guy. I mean, that's not a crazy thought.
Oh, I just can't imagine that this conversation would go to that level and say, let's sabotage what we're doing and put some of the players we don't think deserve to be on the field out there. I don't know if that's ever happened in NFL history.
Oh, yeah, of course it has. I mean,
did you purposely lose games like that?
The Eagles did it. The Eagles did it a couple years ago against the Giants where they put in Nate Sudfeld to sabotage games. I mean, and Doug Peterson got roasted for that. I mean,
I do remember that. I remember watching the game going, why did he put Nate Sudfeld in? And then, of course,
we know why.
Well, now we know a little bit more, but I just can't imagine John Mara going and doing this. And I don't know. I look at the Giants and say this. Yes, the quarterback situation needs to get better. But to think that that's the only problem, yeah, it's a good place to start. But no matter who comes in here, it's going to be rough. And then we're going to, oh, my God, they drafted the wrong guy and all this other stuff. So, you know, look at the game. The Giants had so many chances to win the game. Drew Lock did okay. My God, he needs combat pay. Oh, the number of hits he took. I mean, it's a lot. I just got to say, fighting against the narrative that you're saying there, I just can't believe the Giants would purposely put their team in a situation where we know we're trying to help us lose instead of trying to win games.
All right, let me ask you this question. Let's say they go 2-15 and they still don't get the number one pick. They get the number two pick. If they do get the number one pick, I guess everybody thinks Shedeur Sanders. That there's reports out there that Shedeur doesn't want to come to New York. I don't know if that's true or not. I would think that because Malik Nabers is here and he has obviously spoken very highly of Malik and playing with him, that would be maybe a dream come true for him to come here to New York. But saying all of that, there's a report out there that came, and we played it earlier this morning, and I just want to get your take, because I'm watching these college games, man. I don't know who's good or not good anymore right now, because all these passes behind the line of scrimmage, it's ridiculous. But yeah. Cam Ward right. And his offensive coordinator potentially coming to the Giants. I think Shannon Dawson is his name. I don't know if you know him. I don't know how much you've watched of Miami this year and Cam Ward. Is that a guy that you think is worthy of either number two or number three overall pick?
Well, listen, I'm going to hedge a little bit. I got to see more. I've watched him a lot. I really did take it. I said, let me just watch a couple games. I did this week just out of curiosity because I'm trying to say, you know, what the hell? The NFL, there's so many teams that we're not going to talk about, so I don't worry about them as much as the year goes along. But a few things I wrote down, and I wrote down number one, wow. And I said, wow, because of this. To say he is aggressive is the biggest understatement in a word you could ever say about a quarterback and how he plays the game. It is, he does have a very good arm. He can throw it. Everybody talks about his low release that he has, his sidearm and whatever. I won't get into all that. But he doesn't get passes batted down. But the one thing about him is, and I say aggressive, there could be a guy 10 yards in front of him that literally is not covered and he sees him, but he goes, yeah, that's not good enough. I want to move around and try to get a bigger play. And it's a lot. And it's so different than anything you watch in a college quarterback that you go, I don't know if I'd love him or just go, this would be a big risk. So I think it's close. He is a big guy. He moves around a lot better than you would think. Can break tackles. He's a big dude. And the arm, it's NFL. It's NFL really good. And so that's kind of what I see of him now. I don't know much about the kid, the person, all that. But plays very aggressive in the games and does make a lot of plays. You just go, wow, that was great, moving around, making that play, breaking a tackle, whatever you want. But there's concerns, too. So as time goes on, look at him more and really get a better feel for who he is and where he's going to go in the NFL draft.
You know, it's funny because just watching some of the highlights now, I looked at him like, you know what? He kind of reminds me of the late, great Steve McNair and just the way that, that he...
Oh, great, great analogy.
He's thick.
Yeah, Gio, you hit it. That is.
And I looked up the height and weight of both those guys exactly the same. So, I mean, he and I loved Steve McNair as a player. I mean, if he has like 50% of the want to that McNair had, I would draft that kid immediately.
And what did it say his height was?
6'2".
Yeah, he looks like he's 6'2". He looks, I'd say he looks every bit of 220, yep. 225.
Yes, yeah, that's what he's supposed to be.
He's a little bit bigger than Caleb Williams, it looks like. He's about the same height, but he looks like he's a little bit, and I know you love this, Phil, thicker. He's thicker than
Oh, he's thick.
Oh,
yes.
You love the thick guys.
Yeah, so it's, what do you, you're the one that talks about it all the time.
No, you're the one that tells me. What did he not tell me?
He said, I like them big and thick. We have the drop.
Yes, you said it. You even forgot you said it.
No, I understand. Listen, okay, whatever. I agree. You're right. I have said that in the past. But, yeah, he's definitely going to be able to take some NFL punishment. There's no doubt about that.
All right, so he's going to be a top five pick then, no matter what. I mean, I think it's a foregone conclusion that he and Shador probably goes number one, Cam goes number two in terms of the quarterbacks. Travis Hunter may go number one, depending on who has the overall number one pick. Who knows? But it sounds like these two quarterbacks are at the top of the draft, much like this past year.
Yes, I would agree. Right now, I can't imagine Shador Sanders and then Cam Ward not being one and two in the draft. And we'll see what, you know, is uncovered as we go along and how this process goes. It always changes a little, and we find out more about them, and we got to pay attention to them more. But it is a class that overall, you know, I thought it was going to be there for a while during the season. I would say, oh, this quarterback class might be better than I thought. And then as I keep watching, I look at Carson Beck, and I just go, no energy, just doesn't, you know, you don't see him as the leader of a football team in the NFL, but I'm just watching TV and taking it off of that.
How about Quinn Ewers? How about that disappointment?
Well, yeah. I mean, so I hate to do this to kids, but you tell me the one characteristic that Ewers has that's going to make him a first-round pick. What would that be?
I don't know. I don't know what it is. He throws too many interceptions. First and foremost.
But I don't care. Tell me the physical element of his game. What is it that you think would make him a first-round pick or the franchise quarterback that you're looking for? And you can't give me one. Is it his size? No.
Who's better, him or J.J. McCarthy?
Not even close. J.J. McCarthy is Superman next to him.
Well, wow. Gio doesn't think J.J. McCarthy can play in the NFL.
I didn't like the pick at all. But
oh,
whatever.
Man. You know, I'm really disappointed we didn't get a chance to see more of him, at least a few games during the year and whatever.
Well, I mean, are you disappointed?
Ahead,
I mean, Sam Darnold's got him at 11-2, and he's breaking records through five touchdowns last week. I mean, are we really disappointed we're not watching J.J. McCarthy?
Well, I would know. I just wanted to see more of him, at least in preseason or a game or two in the NFL, because as what he did play in the preseason, I know it was very little. I just went, oh, wow, he looks the part on an NFL field.
Yeah.
The arm is very strong. He is very mobile, and, you know, he's had success, all that. So, but Ewers is not in that, even in the same world as J.J. McCarthy when you talk about the draft and what you're expecting, whatever. So, but right. You know, hey, but here you go, Gio.
Yeah.
And Boomer. There is Sam Darnold. Now, did he just discover that he has more talent all of a sudden? No. But he's got experience. Now he gets with a team that has good players, a good offense, great design. And as I watch him this past week, oh my gosh, I mean, he's just throwing the ball. He's throwing it. I know, I said it.
Yes.
But his power throwing the ball is better than I've ever seen it in his career. And that's the one thing that sticks out. And his toughness is big time. Yeah. Man, he takes hits, and he throws under pressure as he's getting hit quite a bit.
Wow.
So I admire that.
The Jets had him and let him go. The Carolina Panthers had him, let him go. Goes to San Francisco, goes a little bit of quarterback school with Kyle Shanahan and Brock Purdy, and now all of a sudden he's with Kevin O'Connell. This kid McCarthy gets hurt, and now all of a sudden this is the real mature Sam Darnold.
Well, you know, they even say, I've heard it when he was in San Francisco, that, you know, he practiced so well that it put pressure constantly on Brock Purdy. And I kind of agree that. Sometimes, as you know, Boomer, you go on the field, you're a quarterback, you want to be the best thrower and the best guy out there every single day. And you go out there, and all of a sudden, Brock Purdy's, Sam Darnold's pretty damn good. And, you know, physically he is. But now he's had a chance to put it all together, experience, time, and his ability on a team with a great system and players. I mean, come on. When you got Addison and when you got two top receivers running down the field for you, man, it's great. And
it's going to be interesting to see what the Vikings do at the quarterback position. Do they trade McCarthy next year and sign Sam Darnold, or do they just let Sam Darnold walk out the building?
I think they have to go to the Super Bowl.
You have an asset. You have a major asset.
I know, trust me. And I would rather keep him and Sam, but they either have to get, in my opinion, because that general manager desperately wants to be not paying a quarterback to try to build this roster, and they want to have the JJ on the rookie deal. But if Sam either gets him to the Super Bowl and they lose a heartbreaker and he plays great, or they win the Super Bowl, it'll be the only way that he comes back. I think
they do. But I agree, Gio. I think he needs good success. I don't know if he has to go to the Super Bowl, but getting to the championship game, I would really think puts a lot of pressure on him. And, you know, well, there'll be teams that come out and go after Sam Darnold because they're going to give him one of these huge contracts. I don't see that either.
Could be like a Baker Mayfield deal with Tampa.
Yeah, it could be just like that. Then go wherever that is and have success like Baker did. Now he's got a bigger deal for more money. But with Sam Darnold, maybe Minnesota can make that one year, like, let's try one more year. So what? J.J. McCarthy, the first-round pick, has to sit on the bench for another year. I mean, we're finding out just time in the NFL makes you a better quarterback and a better player. So don't be in such a rush to take such a big gamble if this keeps working out the way it is. And I'll say this. Yes, it is a good system, and he has those two really terrific wide receivers. Oh, and a good tight end, too. But it's the way he plays, the physicality, the leadership. I mean, you literally see it on the field when you watch him play. So what a transformation, the way we judged him with the Jets to where he is now.
And oh, that was the Jets' fault.
Yeah. Well, Phil, it's always great talking to you. Enjoy. We will talk to you next week, and then we'll have a little bit of a Phil Sims break, I guess, for a Christmas vacation. But it's great talking to you. Talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. I had some other stuff there. The Jets, can I give this real quick?
What now?
Well, the Jets offense. Where the hell has this been all year?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Let's move the quarterback. Let's do this. Let's do that. I mean, I was watching the game going, well, what happened? Did somebody else? It was crazy.
And they still lost.
And they still lost.
Yeah.
And they still lost, yes. The defense. They're a Super Bowl defense. Don't forget that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, okay. Right.
85.
All right, guys. Thank you.
See you, Phil.
There goes Phil Sims.
Yeah, I never know where he wants to go. I know he has these things written down in front of him. He carries his notebook around. He writes
I
want to
see a show a double feature on the rear end.
See? That's exactly right.
I like my linemen big and thick.
Yeah, exactly. See? Big and thick.
Yeah, we were talking about the quarterback, though.
Big news yesterday with Bill Belichick accepting the head coaching job at the University of North Carolina. Shocking to me. It's shocking for a number of reasons. One, that Bill would want to get into that. And two, that NFL owners really didn't have that much interest in him, because I would imagine that they at least floated the idea of him being the Bears head coach, maybe the Giants, whatever it may be. And he decided, no, there's not enough offers out there for me to pursue the NFL this offseason because the owners are afraid of him. Now, one thing it does here locally, I think yesterday cemented with Bill Belichick going to the Giants. It cemented the fact that Joe Shane and Brian Daboll are coming back.
You mean with him going to Chapel Hill?
With Bill Belichick going coaching to Chapel Hill. Yes. Going to Chapel Hill, meaning that means that Brian Daboll and Joe Shane are coming back.
I read somewhere where they're going to rename Chapel Hill to Chapel Bill.
All right. Is that one of those jokes that got around yesterday?
Yes.
Yep.
I don't want to take ownership of it because it's not mine.
Yeah, well, it's not that good to take ownership of it anyway. So
Chapel Bill, I think it's pretty good.
Yeah. You know, it's a pun. I mean,
I like a good pun. You don't like a good pun?
Yeah, I mean, I like a good pun. I don't like an obvious sort of lame pun like that one, but I do like a good pun.
I thought that was a good pun.
Yeah, it's an okay pun. You know?
Yeah.
So not on the, like a 1 to 10 pun. It's like a 4.
And again, you know, as we've been talking about this all morning, I still think that it was all based around timing. Like, he had this potential offer. He investigated it. He has this 400-page manual. Maybe he realized that, you know, there weren't going to be any NFL owners that were going to give him what he wanted. And therefore, like, this was the next place to turn. And quite frankly, this is exactly what Colorado did with Deion Sanders.
Do you agree with me, though, that now that Bill Belichick has a job, that the most likely scenario is that Brian Daboll and Joe Shane end up staying? Because I cannot see John Mara blowing it up to go out and get two guys who are so similar to them. Another assistant GM, another guy who is a first-time head coach who might be an offensive mind. I can't see him doing that.
You know what? I mean, if you're realistic and you're John Mara and you're realistic about exactly what these coaches have been dealing with, especially this specific coaching staff. You know, they went through a change with the defense coordinator because they had problems last year with that. I mean, you know, it's a little frayed on the edges, if you know what I mean. It's not totally solid, given the fact that Wink Martindale ended up leaving.
Yeah.
I mean, so that you had that, then you have the Daniel Jones situation, the contract, the Saquon Barkley situation. There's a lot of stuff going on here. Now, if the reports are true, and again, this just came from, you know, Pac-Man Jones's podcast, but if that is accurate, that Cam Ward is the apple of the eye of the New York Giants and his offensive coordinator is coming with him to the Giants under Brian Daboll, I could buy that.
Yeah. I mean, and then at that point, there's no excuses at all. But then if you're John Mara, you got to give him a couple more years. Can't be 1 year. Can't be the Matt Eberflus model. Can't be that. If you're bringing in the head coach, I mean, you're keeping the head coach and bringing in that quarterback, then you got to give those guys a chance.
You know, here's the thing. You got to get rid of these guys that are here now. You got to clean that room up. You got to get somebody in here that is a really good veteran that can work, whether it be like a Tyrod Taylor type or a Jacoby Brissett type. You know, one of those guys that are doing the backup commercials for Progressive,
mm-hmm,
or whatever that commercials. Somebody like that that's a quality individual that can teach a young man how to become a professional football player without having to experience it on the field right out of the gate. Because not everybody's ready for that.
No, we've seen it
a million times.
Yeah.
I mean, even Jaden Daniels, who was the presumptive favorite for Offensive Rookie of the Year, you know, actually dipped a lot. Bo Nix is now kind of caught up to him.
He did. I mean, his last game, though, was very good, and he's got a crush spot this week, I think, where he could go off a bye. I think he hit a little bit of a rookie wall there. After he got hit in the ribs, wasn't the same either. But he's off a bye in New Orleans.
Right.
I mean, in a dome, off a bye against a bad football team.
And I would also say that in regards to Joe Shane and Brian Daboll, I kind of feel like the team is still playing for Brian. You know, it looks that way. I mean, but you also have to realize they potentially have, and I don't want to devalue anybody's self-worth or any of that other stuff. I don't want to attack Drew Locke. I don't want to attack Tommy DeVito. I mean, let's face it. Their quarterback situation right now is one of the worst in the league, and you would hope that the owner would understand that this league is built around these quarterbacks, and the Giants don't have one.
Yeah, I mean, if you were going to move on from the regime, it would be because of, to me, three draft picks that you basically whiffed on, which to me were Kayvon Thibodeau, Evan Neal, and Deontay Banks. Though that would be it. Be like, you guys had your opportunity to build this team around what, you know, we were hoping was going to be the franchise quarterback. Because I can't go and do revisionist history here with the Daniel Jones contract. I mean, they protected themselves. They had it out after 2 years. They got it out after 2 years. You know, I mean, after that game, it was the best game he ever played in his life. I mean, moving on, that would have been the most ruthless move of all time to move on from him after that. Maybe they didn't need to pay him as much, but I even said they got to bring him back now. So they did. But really, it's about those draft picks. That's where they have effed up, because none of those guys are impact players. I'm sorry. I mean, Kayvon Thibodeau, out of the three of them, has been the best, but he's not very good. And when you pick a guy fifth overall who's a pass rusher, the guy's got to be Myles Garrett. He's got to be T.J. Watt. He can't be some guy that occasionally gets the pressure.
Up. Yeah. They also made a trade for Brian Burns and gave him a big contract.
And Burns has been good for them.
So. I think you see effort there. I think you see a guy that, you know, is quietly goes about his business, doesn't say much.
Yeah, I mean, for the big moves, like this is why I say those three guys. For the big moves, I like the Malik Nabers pick. You had to sign Daniel Jones. I was on board for not paying Saquon Barkley a lot of money because they were bad with him. They were going to be bad without him. He was perfect for the Philadelphia Eagles. It wasn't going to work here in New York. They didn't want to pay a running back. Fine. So I was fine with all of those things. I probably said the Burns trade. The Burns trade was good. The issues that they have had, and John Michael Schmitz is another bust. So like the issues that they've had is they've drafted at premium positions, and only one guy out of all these premium positions, I feel like in the top two rounds, is someone that you still have hope in Malik Nabers, who has caused his fair share of controversy already this year. And he's had his drops, and he's run his mouth. So, but, I mean, it's John Michael Schmitz, terrible, get bowled over every game. Kayvon Thibodeau, not good enough. Evan Neal, quite possibly the worst offensive lineman in the league. And Deontay Banks is a nothing corner.
Well, he basically is the, you know, if you want to put it in terms where people can understand, you know, like, the talent's there, but the want-to is not.
The lights aren't on.
The want-to is not. Something's off. You know, I asked a couple of people at Maryland about Deontay. They all love them.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what's happened. You never know. Like, money does strange things to people. And, you know, maybe he doesn't understand what it means to be a professional football player, especially on a team that's not doing well, where the team and the fans are really scrutinizing everybody's play. And that game against Philadelphia at home that we did, the fact that he didn't go after Jalen Hurts was eye-opening. Phil and I were up in the booth going, did you just see that?
Yeah, I know. That was a really bad one. Really, really bad one.
So, yeah, I don't know. And that's a young kid, man. So maybe he can grow up. Maybe he can become something. Maybe he can learn from whatever's happened to him and where the Giants go from here with that. Usually, if it's a first-round draft pick, they're going to give them a chance. And interesting watching what Evan Neal has gone through. Oof. That's brutal.
That right there is what it comes down to. It's just, you look at all these teams and how they are built, you know, they're just not missing on, when you're that bad and you're drafting that high, you can't miss on these guys. You have to at least hit on two out of the three of them, or one of them's got to be a superstar. And if anything has held them back, you know, it's been that. And the inability to really, I mean, they got Andrew Thomas over there, but the inability to really.
But that guy can't stay healthy.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and their two best players in Andrew Thomas and Dexter Lawrence are both out for the year, and neither one of them were Joe Shane draft picks. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, neither one of them were.
You know, you'd like to think if you're drafting somebody out of Alabama or Georgia, that they're going to become really good players because they have all the best players.
Yeah.
I guess you could throw Texas in that mix now, especially on defense. You could throw LSU in that mix, especially at wide receiver. You know, Michigan's got the offensive linemen. Iowa's got the tight ends.
Mm.
You know, Penn State's got the linebackers.
Yeah. Linebacker U.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. And it was just a complete bust. I mean, and, you know, nobody, you know, during the draft, and this is why this is tricky, but, you know, scouting is scouting and, you know, picking is picking. And the way it works out, sometimes a crapshoot and sometimes it's not. But if you go back and look at the Giants' grades for that 2022 draft, people loved it. That Evan Neal, Kayvon Thibodeau draft, they were getting A's across the board.
Yeah, because we're attending to the important parts of football that nobody really talks about, offensive and defensive line.
Right. So they tried to build it the right way.
Evan Neal was supposed to be Penei Sewell for the Giants.
Yeah.
And Penei Sewell has turned out to be an incredible football player for the Lions.
You know what? Perfect. And Kayvon Thibodeau was supposed to be Aiden Hutchinson.
Exactly.
And those two guys worked out, and Hutchinson's hurt. But those two guys worked out, and the two guys here are just spinning their wheels.
BT Sal back on the fan. We're joined right now by Odyssey NFL Insider. insider Brian Boldinger, host of the Best Football Show podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. Mayo game day be delicious. Boldy, unfortunately for both these New York teams, the most interesting thing to happen this past weekend was the plane flying over MetLife Stadium, basically saying Mara needs to clean up this mess, the dumpster fire, all that. Where are you at with evaluating this Giants team? And maybe less than the roster, but just Shane and Dable moving forward.
Well, I mean, it couldn't have been a bigger dumpster fire than having a field goal blocked with a chance to tie the game, at least to give the few fans left there a chance for maybe some overtime, a little bit more football. But, like, that sort of put the crown jewel on top of this disaster of the whole thing. It was awful. The quarterback only, you can't get the ball to your star player, Malik Nabers, again for the first 17 plays. You can't draw up a play for him. I saw Cincinnati put Jamar Chase in the backfield on the first play and throw him a hit screen on the first play of the game. The first run of the game was a fly sweep to Jamar Chase. Like, they couldn't find enough ways to get him the ball. Why can't the Giants do something just so simple as to just get Malik Nabers the ball in his hands?
Well, I think the answer is because they don't have a good quarterback. I think you basically start with that.
I can flip it to him in the backfield. I can hand it off to him on a run. I could do a lot of different things if you don't even trust the quarterback.
Yeah.
You're right. I mean, he's not a good player. And, the offensive line's a mess. They can't keep anybody healthy. Runyon goes down last night. They got a backup playing left tackle. The right tackle is a backup player, even though he's the seventh pick in the draft. I mean, it's just, they can't keep their best players healthy. Dexter, Okereke, Deontay Banks. It's just falling apart. I don't know who some of these guys are playing on the defensive line right now. I mean, I studied this as hard as anybody, and you got to look up some of these guys that are playing out there.
Yeah, I mean, there's a good chance, Paul, that they go 0-9 at home for the first time in the history of the NFL, which obviously there's only been a 17-game season for a couple of years. But
you don't think they're going to beat Baltimore this week?
Yeah. They're going to get absolutely crushed. Go ahead, Paul. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, honestly, like I'm not being a cynic here because that doesn't do anybody any good. But, sometimes teams come in, the Pro Bowl voting is going on and all that stuff is coming up. Sometimes teams come into bad teams and they're like, here's where we're going to get our numbers. We're going to get our rushing numbers up. Derrick Henry's going to get back in MVP race. Lamar's going to get his numbers up for MVP. The sack numbers are going to come up. Like, this is where teams look at these kind of games. They're like, I'm coming to get my numbers this week. It's like a baseball player that goes 0-4 one day. Juan Soto goes 0-4. Well, I'm going to go 4-4 tomorrow against that third-string right-hander, that I'm going to go up against. I mean, that's kind of how these teams look at these games.
Interesting. Interesting way to look at it. Listen, I would ask you about this player for the Jets, but he was already there, so I'm going to keep it to the Giants, okay, even though both teams should, in theory, be in the market for a quarterback. Sam Darnold's been really, really good. So I need to know, need to know, number one, we all know the stats. What do you see on film? I know that the coach is very gifted in terms of drawing stuff up, and that's a part of it. But Darnold for the Giants, I mean, does that make any sense next year? Would you play that?
Well, I mean, look, I saw Sam the last 2 weeks. I've done the national radio game against both Arizona and the Falcons. I've seen him both weeks live, talked to him both weeks. Saw Daniel Jones last week. Saw him smiling for the first time in about 6 years,
Yeah.
But it's just, I would say yes, because he was almost flawless on Sunday. But it's such a difference in organization. Like, it's such a well-built team. It's, you got Justin Jefferson, and, you got Jordan Addison and T.J. Hawkins and Aaron Jones and a good off. They lose their starting left tackle. They go trade for one at the free agency deadline, Cam Robinson, who's a good player. Like, it's such a well-built team, well-coached team. If you told me that the Giants were going to be stable, well-coached, well-developed, like the money spent the right way, all that stuff, then I'd say, yeah, it's a good fit because he's playing great football right now. But if it's not, if it's going to be the same musical chairs and it's going to be just the way that they've operated, then he'll probably go backwards and not have the success we're watching right now.
But is the – I got you, and you laid out well. Is the real appreciable uptick in his performance? I mean, do you attribute that almost exclusively to scheme, or is Sam Darnold just better than many of us thought?
No, he's better than what you thought, but he's the player that came out of USC. He's a very good athlete. He's very smart. He's good arm. He's accurate.
Yeah.
But, the scheme, the players around him, he made a couple throws the other day where, I mean, you had to be a great quarterback with good movement and mobility to make the plays that he made. The touchdown to Jordan Addison down the field for 50-something yards, I mean, he made that play himself by just being able to manipulate and move in the pocket.
Yeah.
Why would the Vikings even let him go? Like, I know this idea, oh, he's going to be a free. McCarthy, who cares, J.J. McCarthy? The Vikings are 11-2. They're dominating with Sam Darnold. Why would they even let him go, Baldy?
Trade McCarthy and sign Darnold.
What's interesting about that is I spoke to the general manager there. He's a very sharp guy. And I said, you know, he goes, we're going to figure this out. We got plenty of time to figure this out. We're not in any rush right now. We just picked up Daniel Jones. Maybe we find something valuable in him, like with Sam. Maybe we find, like, if he takes him into the playoffs and plays well in the playoffs, they don't have to make any decision on McCarthy or anybody else. Like, they can figure out a medium price to keep Sam. Sam's loving it. Like, he loves living there. He loves the team, the coach. Like, he doesn't want to go. You know, now maybe a big contract someplace else makes him go, but I think they're going to try to keep him myself.
BT and Sal on the fan. We're talking with Brian Baldinger. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. One more from the Giants on me, Baldy. They can't have happen the way that it happened with Chicago. I've been saying for a while, either commit to Shane and Dable beyond just next year, where you assume they're going to have a young quarterback, and that's obviously what Chicago did, or clean house now going in with one of the top picks, if not the top pick in the draft. Do you think that the top pick should have an impact on where they're at, deciding whether they keep Shane and Dable together beyond this year?
Well, I guess it depends on if the top pick, and if they're in that position. If they're in that position, it depends on who the quarterback is. I mean, Joe Burrow is out there, and he isn't. But, I mean, if you've got a real bona fide number one, or, you know, whatever. I mean, I don't know if it's Shadur or Campbell Ward or whoever these, you know, whatever it is. If you really feel good about that, then I'd say start fresh. Just start fresh, you know, and rip it up. But you know, I don't want to kill, you know, Brian Daboll here. Like, I just see the frustration in his face when the quarterback can't make a throw, make the read, all the things that, they have, like, it's not fair to him. He doesn't have Josh Allen here, you know, and he hasn't had it. So, like, I'm a little torn because I like Brian personally, and I think he can game plan, although I'm a little frustrated with some of the things I saw last week. But still, they got to draft better. They got to build the team better than they are. It always starts up front and in the trenches. They got to be better at team building than they have been, and then you could go from there. But I don't know. I mean, if they lose all these games, then you got a clean house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Baldy, we've seen, I don't want to overstate this, it's not like he's running around like Lamar, but the last couple of weeks we've seen a little bounce and a little mobility return for Aaron Rodgers, extending the pocket a little bit here. Listen, I don't want him back next year, but I'm also on the record that, you know, if it's a Gruden or, you know, if it's a Vrabel and they want to run it back once more with him, I'd obviously trust their football instincts. Are you seeing some stuff on film the last 2 to 3 games where you're like, all right, maybe he's getting a little healthier and maybe he's a little more viable than most of us thought at this point?
Well, he's definitely looks, you know, better the last 2 weeks. You know, they've had chances to win both games. The quarterback's supposed to drive you down the field against Seattle, down 26-21. Last week, you know, you have a chance to go up 2 scores and late in the fourth quarter, and, you know, you can't finish the drives. Now, their pre-snap penalties are off the charts ridiculous. They've had 25 of them in 13 games, and a bunch of them last week, they just killed their drives. But he's played a lot better. He's missed a couple throws that typically he does make, but he's rushing some things. The protection isn't great, but his mobility is much better. Made some, you know, some explosive throws. Garrett Wilson was a dart down the middle of the field against Jalen Ramsey, and the throw to, you know, Devontae in the middle of the field was a great read, a great throw. Like, you got the explosive plays last week that they haven't had, and they all led to scores. And so they just can't finish games 3 weeks in a row against the Colts, Seattle, and Miami. They've had chances to win all of them. And a lot of that sometimes falls on the quarterback making those plays at the end of the game.
I mean, but their defense, Baldy, has been so bad all year long. I know Rodgers is the whipping boy, but come on. I mean, with that defense, I can't take it anymore with that Jet defense.
It's awful. Yeah. It's awful. What Tua just did to him, you know, what Anthony Richardson did to him, what Geno did to him. 3 weeks in a row where you just got to make a stop. You know, you can't, you know, They don't know what they're doing. That throw to Alec Pierce against the Colts still bothers me. Like what Jalen Mills and Sauce were doing back there. Like that's Anthony Richardson, who's like that guy. That's the last guy I'm bringing to the state fair to go get the biggest teddy bear. He's not going to knock the milk cartons down, and you give him that 39-yard throw.
Thank you, Baldy. We appreciate your time as always.
Thanks, Baldy.
Frustration, guys. Frustration.
Yeah, tell me about it. I mean, at least you're watching the other games. We're locked into these freaking Jets and Giants for weeks. The both of them. Yeah. I mean, look, we do watch the other stuff. We're going to have to now.
I'm going to go back and watch Matt Stafford put up 44, okay?
Yeah.
What a game. That was some game. That was fun.
Exactly. The Rams playing well. All right. Thank you, Baldy. We appreciate
it. See you, brother.
You bet, man.
That was Odyssey NFL Insider Brian Baldy, your host of the Best Football Show podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. Mayo game day be delicious. Anyway, so the NFL, we wanted to get into that. We'll get back to the calls. 888-808-1019. I'm at the point, BT, we've had this conversation, you were ahead of it. I believed that Daboll was going to get things stabilized, at least to a certain extent. It hasn't. The competitive nature of the Giants games early on, that's gone away. I've never seen a worse offensive team for the better. Dude, 3 years now. It's not 3 weeks. It's not a season. It's 3 years. I don't know how anybody could, and while I could make a case for like, hey, stay the course and stick with it, and I still believe in Daboll, because I do to a certain extent, how can anybody make the case to keep these guys around beyond this year? Like, why not just clean out, start fresh with a top pick, mm-hmm. and get a new regime in here?
I would, but I think that the only reason why you wouldn't, at least from Mara's perspective, is that he's embarrassed by the constant change. And I think if you ask every Giants fan right now, and I obviously had a real honest conversation with Mara, and say, all right, Mr. Mara, why do you want to bring back Brian Daboll, right? Got the hiccups all of a sudden. Sorry about that.
What'd you eat? You just said
a couple nuts. Just a couple, like the kettle corn, the healthy ones.
I know you usually go for those Cheetos.
Yeah. Sometimes the Cheetos, but the Cheez-Its. Those are good.
Regular Cheez-Its?
They got the white ones.
Okay, the white
Then cheddar. They have the conventional ones, but now they have the extra cheesy Cheez-Its.
And that's the ones you like?
I do, but they don't have them. But we have those in the pantry closet at home. Yeah. So I've got to go for the original cheesy ones.
All right.
So if Mara's going to really sit down and construct a list of why should he stay, why should he go, what tangibly outside of, well, I think he could do this or I think he could do that, tangibly, what are the reasons that you would keep this duo? Like what?
Tangibly, I don't think you can make a case for it anymore.
That's kind of my point.
There isn't, and you know, I was trying to make a case for staying the course, be stable. Now, this was going into the season. This was week two, week six even. Like, it's gotten worse and worse and worse. And it's not just the excuse of the bad quarterback. I never thought it was just Daniel Jones' fault, but it's beyond that.
Yeah.
This is a freaking disaster. Their defense is no good. They're non-competitive. Even teams with bad quarterbacks score points. I mean, my God, it's infuriating. So to answer your question, I can't. There is no tangible reason other than just saying we don't want to change because we've changed before, or blind belief in little things that you've seen over 3 years.
Yep.
I mean, the only tangible thing was year one. He took a team with no talent to the postseason. But even then, it was a clear overachievement, and it wasn't sustainable.
Yeah, and you don't abandon your beliefs, like however few and far between they might be, if deep down, Mara and the rest of the ownership group, Tish, if they really, but more so Mara, if he really believes that Brian Daboll is going to evolve into the coach that all of us at one point certainly thought he would be, and many of us still think that he could be, varying degrees of confidence for sure, but I think many of us think in a different situation, Brian Daboll could be good, if not really good. But he's going to have to answer to the optics of the season. And there you get to a point where you can't ignore it. And you're going to have the rest of the way 15, 20,000 empty seats. The weather's getting worse. The holidays, so Giants are windless at home. They're boring. This is just a continuation of last year. It's gotten worse. They don't seem to be playing very hard. They don't have a lot of talent, so you want to certainly incorporate that and bake that into the evaluation of the coach. But I just think that it's getting to the point where it's untenable, where even if you like Daboll, right, about Mara, how do you look at your fans in the eyes and say, I still believe in this person? It's going to be very hard to do it.
And you can't. And the only way to do it would be to extend them, and I've said this many times, beyond next year. So let's say I do, even without tangible evidence, I believe in Shane and Daboll. I want to see more of Shane, and I believe in Daboll. Let's say that I do. Why take the risk of extending them now beyond next year? Because next year it's going to be a new start. They're going to have a top pick, and all likelihood it's going to be a quarterback, and you're restarting. Why take that risk when you've seen them for 3 years versus just moving on now and bringing in a more known commodity or better situation with a new quarterback? Like, what's the risk? What? Dable's going to be some all of a sudden genius in a couple years? More likely you get burned by sticking with him than making a change right now. So I just don't see the risk-reward making any sense to keep that.
Well, the only question that you need to really ask yourself if you are moving toward the part of the, you know, the conversation where you and I certainly seem to reside at this point, probably going to have to make a change. The only question that matters is who you bring it in.
Okay, now
that's all that matters.
Now I know where you're going with this. I cannot hire Bill Belichick. I think he is unhireable. And let me preface it by saying I love Bill Belichick. I loved everything he's been as a coordinator, as a head coach, all that he brings to the table. Like, that is my wheelhouse. I love Parcells. I love Belichick. However, at this particular point, I had reservations anyway about hiring him. And then recently I went back and watched the Dynasty show that's on Apple Plus.
I still have to get to it.
You got to watch it.
You were telling me about
this.
Dude,
if you watch that, he is unhireable. You understand why he did not get hired by the Falcons or anybody else for that matter in the NFL. He created a toxic work environment with the Patriots. Now, he won a Super Bowl while doing so. This is like the last one that they won. But Brady couldn't stand him at the end. We all know about it. Kraft couldn't stand him. Like, the game hasn't passed him by, like the X's and O's haven't passed him by.
Yep.
His way of handling a football program is antiquated. And you cannot, to me, that would be the biggest disaster that the Giants could make. Bill Belichick is unhireable.
Oh, I definitely don't think he's unhireable, but I don't know from his perspective. I just don't understand what the allure of going to college would be. This flirtation, and I believe it's more than just a surface flirtation to generate some interest in the NFL with North Carolina. I think that he's sincerely intrigued by it, and you just heard the update with Bogus where, you know, outside of salary, they would have to devote some real resources to the infrastructure of the school, and that means buildings and stuff. Now, at his age, by the time that all comes to fruition, I mean, is he going to really reap the rewards of it? No, but his son will, and that's obviously the thought that he would succeed him there. Now, okay, independent of the Giants for a moment, and I would hire him for the Giants. I would, you wouldn't, got
it. I want you to watch that show.
I'm going to.
Get back to me on
100%.
That.
Yeah. But to me, I don't understand why college would be appealing to Bill Belichick now.
It makes no sense.
I could see why college in the 70s and the 80s, you blow the whistle, everybody snaps at attention, most schools, you know. Or maybe if you went to, like, I mean, West Point doesn't need a coach, but what, they've had a great year. One of the academies that was struggling where the young men and women there, for sure, are just, they're inherently different. They're motivated by, the respect and the, like, they're not going to ask any, they're going to do, drop down and give me 50, their nose is in the dirt before your last syllable comes out of your mouth. Like, that's the way the academies go. Why would Bill Belichick want to go to a school and have to deal every single year with a transfer portal? And not only because I know this at St. John's and the other schools in the area, I know that, all right, so we give player X, you know, $500 on the low end, $500,000 to come and play for school, you know, University Y, right? Well, let's say he has a good year, you've got to then re-recruit him and probably give him $200,000 more to stay. Why is Bill Belichick going to deal with that nonsense at the age of, what is he, 74?
I have an
Why
answer.
Why is he signing up for that?
I have an answer.
Why, because nobody else in the NFL wants him?
Correct. That would be step one, and he just wants the coach. And also, is it inconceivable to think that he can be hired as the head coach but also delegate all that nonsense and bull crap to, say, Matt Patricia or Josh McDaniels, whatever, like the recruiting trial, the NIL stuff.
I know what you're saying.
Like, he just wants to coach a program.
Yes.
I'm just trying to.
No, well, it's actually a really good point because I'll even take St. John's. St. John's has a general manager, my guy, Matty A, who I was texting with earlier to make sure he leaves my dad tickets tomorrow.
Yeah, there you go. Matty K.
So Matty's like the portfolio, the money guy. Right. He's great at his job. He's terrific. So Rick Pitino doesn't have to do that. That is Matt and others at the school. So I'm not saying Belichick's going to be in there with a slide. Hey, year one, we'll give you $750, and if you invest this problem. No, he'll be able to circumvent that nonsense. But what he won't be able to do is build a roster through continuity, which I know would be very appealing to him because it would enable him to build a team better, quicker. You know what I would do with Bill? I'm going to give Bill some advice. What I would do if I'm Bill Belichick, how much money does he have? He's led a very simple life. I know he got divorced, so he lost half his money. But I'm not trying to count this money, but that happens. He's got a ton of money in the bank. He's got his boat. He doesn't have some elaborate mansion. Maybe the young girl's making him spend some money he's not used to, but whatever. He's got it. go and coach high school. Go and find, whether it's a Catholic school or a great public school, go and and where they will actually be coached up and you can be you.
So you're saying if you do love
If I was him, I would coach high school.
Yeah.
I mean, I really would. I
mean, there's still more of an appeal with North Carolina. I mean, the challenge.
Yeah, I know.
Like,
but
high school, it just doesn't really matter.
No, but I'm not talking about like a little tiny high school in Long Island or where we live now.
Or
no
Texas
disrespect.
Or something.
No, wherever. But some of these facilities do, like IMG, like down in Florida, and some of these other powers, like Bishop Norman out in Las Vegas. Mm. I'm not saying he's going to take over that program because they're well set off. But
Bill Belichick.
Some of these stadiums are sick. 12,000, 13,000. They have bubbles to practice in. And if you just love football, which we know he does,
right,
and you can circumvent the nonsense, that's why I think he'd probably be happier.
But remember, you mentioned the key part for his son. Obviously, his son would be more appealing
to be
at the college level.
So daddy's got to open the door and then leave it for his son? Is that what it is? Is that all it is?
I think Bill Belichick wants to coach. Right? Let's just
I know he does.
Okay. We can agree that he wants to coach. And I think he would prefer to coach in the NFL. He also wants the record. Like, that's a big part of this, too. Go chase Shula's record. He's not going to get that at North Carolina or certainly in high school. But if he doesn't have an option to coach in the NFL, I just think he loves the game so much, he wants to coach football. And then if you're talking about passing it over to his son, that would lead you to college where maybe he doesn't have to deal with all the bullcrap of it.
Mm-hmm.
Point is, going back to the Giants, I would never in a million years at this particular point hire Bill Belichick to be the head coach.
And it's because more of the interpersonal skills that you said were in the documentary, like an antiquated, hands-off.
Now, you could also look at the lowly Atlanta Falcons and say, well, maybe they made a big mistake. This team has been a disaster. They have talent this year. They've been a disaster with Raheem Morris. And even at the time, like, I wanted Bill. I love Bill. I told you. And then I kind of understood why they made the hire of Raheem Morris and thought it was going to be good. But you can't tell me that they wouldn't be better without Bill Belichick on the field this year.
Yeah.
But I just think his style.
Yep. No, style's
times,
a little different.
I'm telling you, dude, after watching that show, it was uncomfortable. I love Bill Belichick, but uncomfortable and toxic working environment. Mm. Like,
I do have to say it. You've been saying that for a while.
It's the complete opposite of anything that in any workplace ever in 2024 going into 2025 you would want.
Understood. But don't you think that maybe the Bill Belichick you're seeing yuck it up? I was watching last night with the Mannings. Don't you think he's kind of loosened up? Don't you think having a 23-year-old girlfriend maybe changed? Maybe changed a little bit.
Maybe.
You know?
But still the football coach in him, like.
Well, think about this, Al. So you and I, me a little, and I've been this way more than you, earlier than you, I should say, and maybe even slightly more than you now. I believe the Giants should make changes. You're on board with that as well. I would absolutely hire Bill Belichick. You would not. For the Giants, who would you hire?
I would do everything I could to get Ben Johnson. Remember, it's the Giants now. And it's appealing because you're assuming here the number one pick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, I hate the idea
that's
of going.
That's not a bad answer. Let it process.
He's probably going to be the. Dude, you watch the Lions play football. The offensive scheme is just.
Yeah, I know.
It's beautiful to watch. I mean, the design on these plays, like, if you're looking to build a team of offense, which is the way of the league now, and you have a top pick, which makes you appealing.
Yep.
And it's Giants ownership, which you know they're just dying to let somebody have this job long term.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, that's he's the best young or whatever candidate out there.
That's a good answer. You'd have to know how Ben feels about the top two quarterback, you know, Shador and Ward.
Well, I think you'd know the answer if he said yes or no to the job.
That's true. You see, if I'm the Giants, I'd call Vrabel. I mean, I want my Jets
Kingsbury?
To get him. Not for the Giants.
Okay. What about for the Jets?
A little.
I know it's different
more
circumstances,
open to it, but I don't love it.
I was
it
just curious where you stood on Kingsbury overall.
Don't love it.
So you'd go Vrabel for the. You go Belichick.
Vrabel
one.
Number one for the Jets.
No, for Giants.
Belichick
and Vrabel number two.
Yep.
See, I'm not going down that road. I think the Jets need something different. I would stick with Rodgers and go veteran head coach if I'm the Jets.
Mm-hmm. Vrabel's a veteran.
Yeah, I'd be okay with that. I just don't think he's the best veteran option. And even Flores.
Who's better as a veteran option?
I'd take Flores. Well, Gruden would be an obvious one.
Gruden's a couple years with the Raiders. We talked about this.
Also, if you want Belichick, he'd never do it. But that would be a better spot with a veteran quarterback. He even talked up Rodgers, as a matter of fact.
They did. I saw that.
A couple weeks ago, we never mentioned that. But I think for the Giants, if you're starting from scratch and you have a top pick. you try to lure Ben Johnson, who is the clear best right now offensive mind.
And you're not worried.
Can you trade for Sean McVay? I mean, would he even want to come to New York?
I think he's a West Coast guy,
though. Yeah, well, why would you be loving it up?
McVay's awesome. But don't you think, I mean, like the Jets, don't you think the Giants need a proven leader? We don't know if Ben Johnson's a leader.
You know, it's infuriating.
They need that.
Well, they could have had Jim Harbaugh. How about the friggin' Bears? Harbaugh wanted the job.
I know he did.
And they turned him down. You
and he
idiot.
Played for the Bears.
That's what I'm saying.
And
you
he coached Big Ten country out there.
You couldn't have a better
Michigan.
Fish.
That made no sense. Well, that's why they're the Bears.
Yeah, I know.
Honestly.
Well, right, and that's even worse than the Giants, although now you can say they have the quarterback in place, but still, what a disaster. We hope that the Jets and Giants don't do that, specifically the Giants, because if they did keep Shane and Dable, drafted a young quarterback, and screwed it up next year, now you're back to square one again in year two of a new quarterback. I would clean house.
They'd have to give him an extension, as you've said, by the way.
Yeah,
if they're back, there's no way that they're back in Lame Ducks with a first overall pick.
I'm not sure that they would.
He's back. Tommy DeVito will be the starting quarterback for the New York Football Giants on Sunday versus the Baltimore Ravens. This after Drew Lock today, Wednesday's practice, walking boot, a heel injury. And basically, this just comes from so many freaking hits these guys have taken with the beat-up Giants offensive line and the lack of tackle play. And I think combined the last two starts, 33 hits have been absorbed by Drew Lock. So in comes Tommy DeVito. Now, I bring this up, obviously, on top of him starting a quarterback. We debated this yesterday about, you know, what was right for the Giants and what they should do. I fear, Tiki, that we are very close to the danger zone here of Tommy DeVito officially no longer becoming a thing that's interesting with the New York Football Giants. And hear me.
Why?
Okay.
Why do you believe that?
The NFL and the betting world told you what they thought today. The Giants went, remember, they have not been as big an underdog as they are Sunday at home since the 1966 season, which is crazy.
1966.
It was the last time they were a 2-touchdown underdog at home. They were anywhere between 13.5 and 14.5 point underdogs. I know the non-gambler doesn't care, but hear me out. The moment Tommy DeVito was announced as the starter, the spread went to 16, which tells you Drew Lock accounted for one more point for this team. Anyway.
Right.
The point is, the spread is that big for a reason. The Ravens are coming off of a bye week in which they lost to the Philadelphia Eagles, in which they know the heat is on now to make sure they get into the playoffs, forget winning the division. That is a team that's going to be ready to go, a team that runs the hell out of the football. How are the Giants going to stop the run game with Derrick Henry, Lamar Jackson?
I love watching big men do damage on little guys.
Knowing how bad the Giants' offensive line is, the last time we saw Drew Lock play, Tommy DeVito play quarterback for the Giants, they got blown out. It was a rare blowout
right.
this year versus the Tampa Bay Bucks.
Yeah, but there were circumstances around that one. That was right after the Daniel Jones
You're
release,
right.
which y'all remember. Remember, I did my show from Friday from the facility and told you guys how emotional it felt there. And then they had to play a football game, two days later, it was challenging.
It was challenging. But there's circumstances around this, too. The team is forever beat up here.
Right.
They're playing an even better team than the Tampa Bay Buccaneers here, Tiki. And here's the problem. Now that Tommy DeVito is forced to start, I think Tommy DeVito is going to give it all he has. And I think he knows, I'm just going to feed Malik Nabers, hand it off to Tyrone Tracy. Daves will design whatever game plan he can. The offensive line is so beat up, and the defense now is even more injured stopping these guys.
Right, but they played great last week.
They did.
Especially the defensive front. Now, part of that was scheme. Shane Bowen had to have been a lot more five down looks
right.
with those two, three techniques or four eye techniques, those, you know, three in the middle and then two edges. So obvious run situations or specific to personnel, they did a good job stopping the run.
They did. They slowed down Alvin Kamara. Now do that with a two-headed monster of Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry. Oh, by the way, Zay Flowers could be running free. This is a better team than the New Orleans Saints.
Of course they are. And by the way, they're not desperate, the Ravens, but the Ravens are, they need to put on a good showing.
They need a flex moment.
Right.
They do. So this is why I fear for DeVito. The Giants, in my opinion, and we'll give our picks on Friday, Tiki is not allowed to pick or give a slant on this. In my opinion, I think the Giants, this is not going to look pretty on Sunday. I think it can look prettier in the opponents that will follow this, the Colts, the Falcons, et cetera, whatever the Eagles throw out there week 18. I think this is not going to look pretty. Forget the Dable stuff and all of that right now. If it's not pretty, and this is now twice in the last four games where the Giants haven't been pretty, and Tommy DeVito has been the quarterback in both, last year, we talked about the gabagool, the hand signals, and all that stuff that went with DeVito actually winning football games. The fans seemingly didn't care when they showed up to MetLife Stadium. There were a lot of Buccaneer fans there. I'm not sure how many fans are rearing up to go watch Tommy DeVito play this Sunday. if our last two instances of Tommy DeVito football are now blowouts versus better teams, Tiki, I think the fad with Tommy DeVito, you plant the flag, is not fair to him.
Yeah,
it's officially dead.
I mean, maybe. It's interesting, because I didn't think of it that way. I think of it still as just an opportunity for Tommy DeVito to have that same spark that you saw last year.
It's an opportunity for sure.
And so this has forced me to go back and watch the Tampa Bay Buccaneers game. Like I usually go back two games. I don't usually go back three games, and I'll see it on the cut-ups, but I won't go back and watch the full game. But I had to go back and I watched that Tampa Bay Buccaneers game this morning because we found out Tommy DeVito was playing, and there was just things you could tell he hadn't played.
Right.
To me, that's what it felt like. A guy who sees all-out pressure. He's got man coverage. Darius Slayton's running a corner route. He's wide open because the safety's trailing him from like 15 yards away. But he throws the out route, and it gets knocked down short of the first down, and Wandell Robinson makes a good catch. But you end up having to punt. So it was just those little things that happen because you're not used to playing. And when you're not used to playing, you're going to do it safe. Right, you're not going to hang in there for an extra second, maybe take a hit and throw the corner route. You're just going to get rid of the ball quickly because I see what's immediately available to me. Well, in the last season, he wasn't doing that. Last season, he was really dialed in to where the opportunity was, given what defenses were trying to do to him. I do know this: the Ravens are going to bring pressure. Because just you do for young quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. So how he handles that is really going to determine how he performs. But I didn't think about it from we're going to fall out of love with Tommy DeVito.
I'm giving you the prophecy here. Mm. It's not, and
sounds like what you expect. If he plays terrible, you don't want to see him anymore. That's basically what you're saying.
It's not even that I don't want to see him anymore. But when we saw him last year, like he built up all those good vibes, and then they lost to the Saints, they went back to Tyrod Taylor. When we finally got to see him this year, and something that Lugauer was calling for all year, let's see DeVito, he got put in a spot where he finally played after the team was demoralized, the Daniel Jones stuff, and they got blown out. The team fought hard versus inferior opponents, versus the Cowboys and the Saints. Now, they're going back to playing a behemoth playoff team, and more players are injured. I mean, how many times do you run Tommy DeVito out there where the fans are like really into this, where they're waving the Italian flags at the park and it fires you up? I think the appetite for Tommy DeVito officially dies.
But I mean, you saw it last week in the Saints game.
They cheered.
They cheered for him. He came out for a play, so they cheered for him.
They're going to cheer for him Sunday.
You're saying if he's bad, by the end of the game, if it's really
He's taken 10 sacks. The O-line stinks. Ugh. The team is losing by 3 touchdowns. You're going to be in the booth. You watch. There are not going to be a lot of people chanting Tommy, Tommy. Now, Lugauer has pumped this up big, positive Tommy. He's been on the DeVito thing. He's planted the flag. Be honest. It's not about you being fired up to see him Sunday. Tommy, if this team loses by 17 points, the Ravens cover the spread. How are you going to spin this as a positive if the appetite's still there for Tommy DeVito?
I've never been more convinced that Tommy DeVito is the next Tom Brady. See, here's why. People like Sean that want to discount Tommy DeVito, that they already want to have the final score up there, Ravens 41, Giants 10, DeVito's going to get sacked 10 times. Tommy DeVito has been discounted his entire life. Undrafted, unheralded, third string, doesn't even dress most of the season as far as being either QB1, QB2. He gets, this injury, they put him on the bench, whatever. Every single time he gets an opportunity, I have full faith that this guy's going to rise to the occasion. I think about Brady in that AFC Championship game in 2002, right? The 2001 season, gets hurt in the game, Bledsoe comes in, we all know what happened after that. Tommy DeVito has stuff that you just can't measure. Heart, toughness, chip on his shoulder, much like Tom Brady. And we all know where Brady's career went after that. Right, so the Tommy DeVito story is not dying on Sunday. Look, it's continuing.
You might be wrong. Everything you're saying about Tommy is right. He is tough. He's dependable. He's an everyman. Everybody loves Tommy DeVito.
Just compare him to Tom Brady.
He's a good fella. He's one of us.
He is one of those guys. And you feel like connected to him in a way. But if he stinks, what does that do to the legacy? Not the legacy, but like the aura of Tommy DeVito.
That's the taste in your mouth that's going to be left. Is right, that DeVito thing was fun 2 years ago, but remember last year? Like that, it's going to be gone.
The fans will never turn on Tommy DeVito. They will never, ever, ever turn on him. He's the people's champ. He's the people's choice.
See, Tommy, this turning on him in there is just accepting reality. I don't think fans are going to boo Tommy DeVito off the field on Sunday. I don't think fans are not going to appreciate that he's the local kid that did something and possibly started games for the New York Giants. But I think the idea that a lot of us had of develop him, maybe he's a backup quarterback for the future. I'm not saying that's all the way dead, but I think people just aren't going to care anymore about that. Like, I think you'll enter the offseason phase and go, you know, get your starting quarterback. Let's find a veteran backup. Like, you're not going to give a rat's ass, to steal a word from Evan, about whether Tommy DeVito's on this team or not next year.
The Ravens secondary has not been good all year long. In fact, it's their biggest weakness, is why they're not going to win the Super Bowl. Their secondary is awful. Give DeVito time. He will cook. Give him time.
But
he didn't get any time against Tampa.
That's a big if.
Well, yeah, like, that's got to be accounted for if he has no time.
Well, Josh Azudu has been bad.
Hubbard. Evan Neal.
Right.
And now, by the way, John Runyon is out, too.
I know.
That Giants offensive line. There's nothing DeVito could do about that. If he doesn't have time in the pocket.
You're already making excuses.
This is my point. There's nothing he can do about it. But it's
give him the opportunity. Give him the pass protection, and he will carve the Ravens up.
Now,
but he's
got to
have that time in the pocket.
I feel like such a good lawyer. I've been watching a lot of Lincoln Lawyer on Netflix. Great show. I can't recommend. I have Tommy on the stand now, and I got him to say a couple things that I need to test him. It's all the plan that came into
Tommy!
Lou Gehrig just laid out for you, positive Tommy, why you can't blame DeVito. Look at all that's wrong around him. But yet, you want to blame Brian Daboll and run him out of town. He can't control it. This offensive line is that beat up. He can't control this quarterback room he's got. He can't control the lack of talent.
I'll flip it on you. If you think Brian Daboll is the quarterback whisperer, he should be able to develop Tommy DeVito into what I think his ceiling is Tom Brady.
Okay.
That would be
Developed into his ceiling last year, and unfortunately right now there's nothing you can do about it.
What if he's just not Tom Brady? I think that's what you have to address.
What if?
I mean, he's not, obviously.
Let's go under the assumption he's not.
Okay, so if he's not even close, so then what are you getting out of him?
But Tom Brady wasn't Tom Brady until he became Tom Brady. There's no reason that Tommy DeVito can't be part of this franchise for the next 10 years.
Okay.
There's no reason why.
Spoiler alert, Sunday at around 5:30 p.m., nobody's going to think he's the future of the franchise. It's not going to be his fault, but nobody's going to be thinking that. And that's my crystal ball. So, Giant fans, is your appetite for Tommy DeVito dead come Sunday?
I think it's still, for now, I think people still want to see Tommy DeVito. I don't know. And the Tampa Bay game, unfortunate as bad as it was, it was such a small, like, quick, because they felt like they barely had the football in the game.
Yeah.
The Buccaneers dominated time possessions from the very beginning of the game.
Especially that first half.
And then all of a sudden you felt desperate. And Tommy's, you know, getting rushed. He just feels lost out there at times. I need a bigger sample size. And we saw it last year, but I need to see it again to know whether or not, you know, it's like, all right, Tommy, you were fun for a minute, but now we got to let you go.
38 degrees on Sunday, 3-score underdogs versus the Ravens. Is there a single person unrelated to Tommy DeVito or from his school district that is buying a ticket now on Sunday because they found out he started? I don't think so.
Maybe.
If you're out there, please call at 888-808-1019. I think the Tommy DeVito appetite's completely
dead. It's not like it's raining. It's supposed to be nice.
I'm telling you. Dead seas like this, nobody now is going, I got to go see Tommy DeVito. It's done. It's dead. It's dead.
There will be no banner flown above MetLife Stadium. Tommy
sure
DeVito.
Dude,
Tiki laid it out. He got cheered when he came in the game the other day. He got cheered at MetLife Stadium last year when the Rangers won the Stanley Cup, when they beat the Islanders. Tommy DeVito is over with the audience.
What are you laughing at with that?
Because
why is it not true?
Give
him the benefit of the doubt with that.
It's just funny. His delivery on it was pretty funny.
They won the Stanley Cup. Just ask Marash. Tommy DeVito, this is my question for you, though, Sean. I'm going to flip it on you.
Okay.
When Tommy DeVito beats the Ravens, how are you going to react on Monday? Ooh. Mr. Tankist, a tankologist, a tankathon, if you will.
So
First of all, you'll be shocked.
Yeah, that's, you know what's funny? I would feel the same way I felt when Juan Soto signed with the Mets. There would be this stunned numbness where...
Like, right. Now you just hurt our chances.
Exactly.
But he beat the Ravens. He beat the Ravens.
Now, look, I will feel great for DeVito. I'll feel great for Brian Daboll. it will take 20 minutes for me to get over the stunness where I would go, God, that was probably really bad for us. That was the Jets beating the Rams and not getting Trevor Lawrence bad for us. And I don't want to live in that world.
And I figured let's decorate the studio with some stuff. So I brought in, what do they call the green stuff that's usually
garland?
Garland?
Yes.
Okay.
Like John.
Like John, thank you. Former pitcher for the White Sox. Look at you. So I brought in some garland, and I also brought in some fake snow.
It looks nice.
You like the fake snow?
Yes, tis the season.
Tis the season. So I went fake snow, and I went garland to kind of decorate the studio.
Wow. And I love all the bobbleheads everywhere.
The bobbleheads are in a snowstorm.
Right. Abe Lincoln looks like he's on a cloud.
It also looks nothing like snow. It looks like a cloud. It looks like your dog ripped apart a toy.
Really? Yes. It doesn't look like snow?
Not at all.
I mean, I bought snow on Amazon. Well, like, I even wrote fake snow.
But, Evan, the way you've displayed it, and you can see it on SMY here, when snow is on the ground, it's on the ground. You have it, like, up in the air.
You know what?
Like
I'm looking at us on SNY right now,
yeah,
and you're right.
Kind of floating.
The snow looks like clouds.
Yes.
That's a bad job out of me. All right, I will do a better job during our next commercial break of flattening said snow.
Willie Mays is in the best spot.
Yeah, he's
Most
on.
Most people can't see him, though, right?
He's
now.
On a WFAN helmet.
Right. He's hiding in the front of the helmet.
Yes. So, do you want me to bring more holiday stuff in?
I think SNY should.
SNY should?
Why not? Come jazz up the set.
You're going to pay for it, or are you going to ask them to pay for it? Is that how this works now? Well, you're going to demand them to buy Christmas stuff?
Big theme of the show today, Hal Steiner, ain't my money.
Yeah, go do it. You know how I, watch this, you know how I can guilt SNY into doing it? And this was all a coincidence, because I literally brought it in today, because I knew I didn't have room for this at Casa de Robert, so let me bring it in here. CBS Sports Network is decorating Boomer and Geo Studio.
Right. They do it every year.
And I felt like such a schlub, right? Because they've got boxes of stuff they're bringing in there. And then I'm walking in with my garland and fake snow. And CBS is looking over like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
But that's very typical of me.
But you know what? It's us.
Yeah. We don't need to be special.
Right. It's homie. It feels like it's ours.
Are you okay with me?
Of the heart.
Are you okay with me buying a train set?
An actual train set?
Yeah, I'm thinking of buying a train set.
Is it going to work? And can we put a little bridge over the little thing right there?
Yeah, I'll
build a little gap.
If you want the bridge.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Oh my God, we can name the bridge the Lugauer.
I got it. It took me a second. I like that. All right, real quick before we get back to your calls, obviously Yankee fans reacting, Met fans reacting to the news that came out even less than 24 hours ago of Juan Soto signing with the Mets yesterday before the Giants game in honor of, like, I don't know, 1978. Somebody bought a plane, or at least rented a plane, and had a message over MetLife Stadium. I'd like to read the message to you so you understand what it said if you didn't see the image yet. Mr. Mara, enough. Please fix this dumpster fire. Okay? Mr. Mara, enough. And the please was PLZ. So it was please with only three letters.
Yes.
Fix this dumpster fire. There's a few things I want to address. Number one, how about the person being respectful and going the Mr. Mara card?
Nice.
You kind of have to admire that a little bit.
Is this Sean?
Was it you, Sean?
I ain't buying no plane.
Was it Malik Nabers who said, I didn't buy that plane?
Right, and everybody thought that he did because he said it like that.
Imagine if Malik Nabers was I got
Malik
this great
Nabers
idea.
Would never, ever think of doing that.
Well, and if Malik Nabers did it, the message wouldn't be, Mr. Mara, enough, fix this dumpster fire. It would have been, throw Leak the ball.
Right.
That's what the sign would have been. But I'm enamored by the idea around this. First of all, if you are the person who orchestrated this, I'd like to hear from you. And there's no, I don't think you did a bad thing, honestly, because I think you sent a message to ownership. And Tiki, you tell me if I'm wrong. I think this was a respectful message.
Oh, it wasn't a respectful message.
You didn't say sell the team.
Well, it came on a particularly, I don't know, rough day. Because, not because the Giants lost, but when you looked at the secondary market to get tickets, it went down to a dollar.
Yeah.
Right before our game started, it was $7. And then because we were looking at the same thing at Nissan Stadium.
Right.
It was like, all right, $12 to get into this game here in Nashville, Tennessee. So we looked at the Giants. It was $1.
Amazing.
Kickoff,
yeah.
Which is insane.
I wonder, and you tell me, the New York Giants as an organization are deciding now, in the best interest of business,
that they're better off losing games. I think we could all agree with that. If we don't want to use the word tank, they're making business decisions.
There's no way that Mr. Mara would say that, and there's no way that Dabes is saying
that. Nobody would ever say that. But do you agree that that is taking place right now?
I don't. It feels like it is, but I can't say that it's intentional.
Well, I don't think the players would ever do anything intentional, but I think that who didn't play...
There's a lot of them that didn't play.
Yeah, I think they're clearly making a business decision.
Right, but now, with that being said, some of the guys that they brought in, particularly on the defensive side, actually played their asses
off. They absolutely did. They had a chance to tie the game, as we all know.
Right.
But here's what I am curious about in concerning Mr. Mara. John Mara saw that message. In fact, he was asked after the game, and he went no comment, which I think is probably the right route to go.
Right.
What are you going to say? John Mara saw that plane flying overhead. John Mara saw that the secondary prices were a dollar. John Mara heard MetLife Stadium. I don't know if you guys heard this, but when that field goal was blocked, do you have the audio of this? I think this is amazing. When the field goal was blocked, MetLife Stadium erupted in cheers. Take a listen if you missed it.
35-yard field goal for Graham Gano for the tie. Prior to the snap, Dylan the hold, the kick.
To me, and
now,
I got
you think
this.
That was Saint fans?
No, I think that was Giant fans.
Giant fans.
I have a couple sets of people that were at this game, and while they said they weren't actively rooting for the Saints, by the time the game was nearing the end and they knew the Jaguars had lost, that was
the Jaguars had won.
The Jaguars had won. Their natural reaction was, "This is awesome. We're higher up for the pick."
Yeah,
but there's still four games left.
They had a moment. You know, the fans there had a moment.
All I know, and I'm not at the game, and we're judging this audio, and maybe it's tough to hear on your car radios, it sounded like people were cheering. Combine that with Giant fans being at the building and saying, I think they were cheering. And here's my point. Between that message going over MetLife Stadium, between the secondary market, between the ballpark, or I should say stadium being empty, my pendulum on John Mara firing everybody moved yesterday. I really do. I think it went from 70-30 they're staying to, right. I think this is a 50-50 proposition. I don't think John Mara, or in this case Mr. Mara, wants to be embarrassed. And I think that message flying over MetLife Stadium was embarrassing. I really do. And I think that when he sees that displeasure from Giant fans, what are you going to do about it? And fair or not, I think there's a greater chance today Dable and Shane are gone than there was yesterday.
Well, it gets harder to evaluate them doing a good job, or at least even arguing that they're doing a good job, when you see the roster that was out there. That's Shane, after the injuries and whatever you want to say, after some of the regressions, or not even regressions, let's call it just the same old nonsense penalties. Think how many points were taken off the board in this game.
Yep,
the Saints are not a good team. Right, especially after Derek Carr got hurt, and I forget who the kid's name that was in there. They're not a good team. And so the Giants had missed 13 points. They're the lowest scoring team in the NFL by a lot. And 13 points got taken off the board because of stupid penalties. And so, those are discipline things. Those are awareness things. Those are doing the right things in moment things. Now, some of these are just young players that just haven't gotten an opportunity to play. But I remember saying this about, we brought up Dan Campbell last week with the Lions and like how quickly they got it turned around. I remember those first couple of years, they had players on defense that had no business being in the game. None. The next year, they're actually out of the league. They were playing their asses off. You could tell how well coached they were. And so at some point, you start saying, where are we going with this team? Like, where is this culture that was established a couple of years ago in 22 when they won got into the postseason and won a playoff game? Where is that? Because it doesn't look like it's there anymore.
No, I agree.
And that's not a good sign.
Do you think that the emotion of seeing your empty stadium, hearing that crowd reaction, and dare I say seeing that sign, you think that moves the owner to change his mind on his plans?
I think it would have to happen a lot more.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe it will. I don't know. There may be more planes planned. I have no idea.
And two foods for thought on this. The Giants are right now 14.5-point underdogs. It is the largest home underdog they've been since 1966.
Oh, my God.
So that is going to be a big storyline this week.
Thank you so much for saying that, because one of my plans for this evening was to go on Pro Football Reference and go through every season and see the last time they were this big of a dog. So the fact you're just giving me the cheat sheet right now, you saved me a lot of work. Thank you.
1966. And, Lugie, do you want to give this painful injury to that the Giants have?
Yeah. Wait,
Giants haven't been that big of an underdog since 1966. At home since 1966?
More than two touchdowns, yes.
Wow.
Tiki, that's a big one.
So and think about that.
I think that
good chance the Ravens cover, by the
all of these things that we're hearing, and this is what changes things. And I said this to you. It's going to take a special kind of badness for Daboll and Chain to lose their job. I think the special kind of badness is happening.
Right. Even when you look at Jacksonville, like Jacksonville was the same. They were in the same spot. Doug Peterson, third year.
Yeah.
9-8, then 9-8. Now they're waffling. They won a game.
Yeah.
Right? It wasn't pretty. They found a way to win a game.
I think they have to win a game. I think where I'm at right now.
I think you're right.
I think if they don't win another game and they finish this season 2-15, I think John Mara and ownership's going to clean house.
I think Dable knows he's safe. He couldn't wait to announce Drew Lock as the starter. If everything you're saying is true and Giant fans are going to be pissed off for the next couple home games, then why do you immediately go, we're going with Drew Lock?
Well, I'll tell you, the Drew Lock Tommy DeVito thing is something that does not make sense. We'll get into it as the days go on, but I am kind of. My brain is shattered off that. But real quick, you guys said there's another painful injury. Quick.
Yeah, I've never heard of this injury. Trey Hawkins suffered a fractured lumbar spine yesterday.
What?
Yes, he has been declared with a fractured lumbar spine ending his season. That sounds like the most painful injury you could
fractured
have.
Fractured lumbar spine.
I think I got that when I fell off my bike, by the way. Huh.
Really?
I think I had a fracture of the L3. Is that the same thing?
Oh, maybe.
That's maybe. What I had, so I don't know.
I mean, I fractured a little bone in my back, and it was one of the most, it's probably the most painful injury I've ever had.
Man,
those little, you know, on the spine, those little things that come off on the side?
Yeah.
They're called transverse processes. I cracked one just a little bit. Didn't really do anything, like, functionally. It hurt worse than anything I've ever had in my life.
It's the worst. And that's why the idea of tanking, like, yes, I think that the Giants are making business decisions. A guy like Trey Hawkins ain't making a business
decision. No, because he hadn't played all year.
Right. He's out there playing his ass off, and look what happened to him. He's got a whatever, a something with his lumbar.